For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
And welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Howard Eskin podcast. This is episode number 14. I think we've done 13 others already, and we just keep on rolling, and now it gets into the meat, the good stuff, the football stuff, which is mostly, and I mean, there'll be other issues, and there are other things that I want to talk about, and we will clearly talk about that. But this is football at camp every day and watching those guys, and they had a live practice this week, live means tackling to the ground. And a guest this week at the Eagles practice, and he comes every year, is Dick Vermeil. And Dick, obviously, he stays on top of it. I don't think people understand how involved and how much he's involved in watching teams and watching games, and he works out. Now, that's what he does at home. He works out all these numbers, but still a sharp, sharp guy and a sharp football guy, and obviously, a lot of opinions, and very honest with his opinion. So we talked about many things, how good the team is, what the team may need to do, the difference. The thing that I noticed, especially when you talk to players that played before, and it happens in a lot of sports, but especially football, it's a lot different now than it used to be in terms of the times you're allowed to actually physically touch another player or tackle another player or practice the way you used to practice. And Vermeil, when Dick Vermeil first came to the Eagles, he practiced hours, and there were no rules. There are rules now, which, I mean, he adjusted when he went to the Rams. He knew he had to adjust because you couldn't work players that long. But Dick Vermeil, some really, really interesting comments, and I was fascinated when I asked him, and everybody asked everyone, oh yeah, how many games are the Eagles going to win? When I asked him how many games, I forget exactly how I phrased it, the number of games that they would win, I was surprised. I really was surprised with his answer. And the other thing that surprised me, he really was critical of another team, and it wasn't necessarily the Cowboys, in the NFC East. So here we go. He's legendary in Philadelphia. He made it to a Super Bowl, like all the coaches since the Super Bowl started. They won a championship in 60, but all the coaches after that, nobody has won a Super Bowl. But he had gotten there with the Philadelphia Eagles. Here is former Eagles head coach and Super Bowl head coach, because he did win with the Rams, Dick Vermeil. The man is a legend in this town, and he should be a legend for all the things that he did here in Philadelphia. Kind of, you know, really kind of put football back on the map after a lot of bad years, and that would be Dick Vermeil. All right, Dick, the game is different. How, in your opinion?
Well, it's more wide open. The players overall are probably, team speed overall is a little bit faster. And right. The big guys are a little bit faster than the big guys used to be. They don't get as much time to teach them how to play the game fundamentally. It's all system and schematic themes and situations, and less time teaching somebody that had marginal fundamentals to get better, you know, less time.
Well, but how do you, I mean, that's important. As a coach, if you had a coach under these rules, could you get everything out of the players that you had on your football team?
No. No, there's absolutely no correlation between working less and getting better. It doesn't exist. I don't care what game you're in. It doesn't exist. No, you couldn't do it, but you'd have to find a way to do a better job within the time frame that everybody in the league is operating under. The problem, Howard, is normally when you're a new coach, you take over a losing team. And the teams that are beating you are working hard, and you cannot outwork them anymore. You have to work like they're working in the same time frame. You just have to find a way to do a better job within that time, and your personnel department better not make a mistake.
Okay, so how hard is it, what camp is for, is to determine what players that you really didn't have penciled in to make your team can make your team? So how hard is it for instance, Doug Peterson to do that?
Very difficult, very difficult. A great example is this week I go in the Hall of Fame. There wouldn't be a Kurt Warner today in this system.
Right.
Okay.
That was your guy.
Yeah.
I know.
Free. He threw 11 passes in his career before becoming the most valuable player in the league. But he got a lot of reps, a lot of coaching, went to the European League and played 10 games.
Right.
All these things added up. Yes, he had the God-given talent, but he never had the time and the opportunity that you can't give him that kind of stuff today.
There's a problem. People, you know, fans are great. They see a player that was in camp here that may have success somewhere else, but it's not fair all the time to the coach and the personnel people because you couldn't tell why he was here, right?
Yeah, you couldn't expose him to enough opportunities. And you can only keep so many guys. You know, when we came to training camp here, we'd have 120 guys. and we'd stay out and we'd send guys in and keep other guys out just to keep working them.
Okay, you look at the Eagles, wide receiver, it's amazing. Last year they weren't good enough. Now it looks like they have too many. How many of the wide receivers did you notice when you were out there?
Well, one morning. I'm not a genius in one morning. I've never been a genius, but I was impressed. I was impressed.
Marcus,
they all looked like they could catch a ball.
Marcus Johnson is the player, 84, who's created some buzz
here.
Yeah, out
of Texas.
Yeah.
4.37.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he made a nice play today, right down between double in and out coverage. He went right between them.
You know, so when you have to determine, you know, your wide receivers, I mean, there's now practice squads and all those things. What do you look for when you see, let's deal with the wide receiver position. What do you look for? Can't be just hands, right?
No, it's got to be consistency under pressure. I don't know if you can put enough pressure on the practice field. They got to play them a lot in the preseason games and get the ball in their hands. The trouble is you can play in a preseason game and a quarterback can throw them five balls that were not catchable.
Right, and that's a problem.
That's a problem, big problem. So you've got to expose them to as much as you can, game-type environment and tempo on the practice field.
When you watch Carson Wentz on the football field, what is it that you see from him that is impressive? And you're a quarterback guy. What is it that's impressive?
Well, it's more impressive today than last year when I was here.
Right.
I promise you. Yeah. He's throwing the ball downfield accurately. And he threw almost every ball very accurately. He made one mistake over on the left side, but he was very impressive today.
Yeah, but a lot of times at these things, don't the coaches tell you, I want you to throw the ball, even though maybe that's not always the throw? So can you judge that when you watch a quarterback play?
I think you can. I don't know how many coaches really do that.
Well, because he tries to force it in.
Yeah. And make a play that doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, and you'd prefer him not to. Of course, you pat him on the back when he does and makes it. Okay. You know, bad. Oh, good. You know,
when you look at Carson Wentz, okay, he's got physical skills. He's got the brains. He's got the work ethic. How many of those things are important for him to take that next step?
He has no limitation, I think, right now. He has no limitation. Plus, he's a great kid. You know, I had great luck with the kids out of those kind of states. They're different. They think differently. What's he do when he gets his first day off? He goes, sits in a tree stand. He doesn't go Vegas looking for the Topless Show, you know?
Right.
I mean, they think differently. And they think family. They think team. And what you don't ever know is how they're going to really excel under extreme, consistent pressure. I would bet on him. I would bet he has some of that Navy SEAL stuff in his blood. You know?
Really?
Yeah. I think he's a...
That part of it.
Yeah.
You know, Dick, coaches are always under pressure. Not as much when you were coaching because
media. Not even close.
What kind of pressure does Doug Peterson have this year?
Well, there's always going to be a little questions, you know. No one was questioning when they started the season last year and what 5 in a row wins like
right.
that. But that's always going to exist, more so today. Howard, 35% of the 485 coaches that carried the title head coach were fired in the first year.
Really?
Yes.
And you know all those numbers.
Oh, I've studied it.
Yeah.
I listen to people, radio guys, and some of them are extremely well prepared and some of them are not. And sometimes I hear something said, so I question it and I evaluate it. I have time to do those things.
Right.
And it's a... I think the pressure on him is self-induced. Yeah, I really do. I think there's no experience that can replace being a leader. You know, he's in a leadership position last year for the first time, a limited time as a head coach in high school. All that pays dividend. Last year was probably the most valuable learning experience he's had to be a head coach. And he'll be that much better at the leadership role, I think, this year.
Okay, you came to the Eagles as a head coach. Now, it wasn't in the pros. It was in college, obviously, at UCLA. Doug had his first year as a head coach last year. What does he have to do, or what does he have to overcome in the second year as being a head coach?
Well, you know, not being in meeting rooms with him, not on the practice field or anything, I was impressed with his game day poise. I thought he did a really good job, especially for a first year. Hell of a lot more poise on the sideline than I had my first year. So I was was impressed with that.
Yeah.
I think all of us in that leadership position, you keep gaining command in front of the squad till they know who is the boss.
You have to have respect.
Yeah.
Now
you can earn it.
Okay.
You can earn it.
See, some coaches want to be part of the guys, not part of the guys, but want to have fun with
saying.
The guys. You know, can you be nice and have the respect when you have to be tough? I mean, how tough is that, the separation, or mix the two together?
Big thing is be yourself. You can't imitate somebody else. You can improve your leadership skills. Some people have an innate ability to connect. That's true in the media world.
Yeah.
Have the innate ability to connect with people, their audience, their teammates, their coaches. I like Doug. I've been around him personally.
Yeah, I like him too.
I like him. And I think he will continue to grow in the command of the job.
Okay, you know? This year there are expectations with the signings. What do you expect from this year's Eagles team?
I'll be surprised if they don't win 11 games.
11?
Mm-hmm. 10, 11
games. Even with that schedule?
Yeah. But, you know, nobody's saying that those teams that had a pretty good season last year are going to be really good this year.
But it's the travel, too.
I know. But if you're going to excel as a head coach, this is an opportunity to do it. You know, and he will grow, and I think he'll handle those experiences well. The big thing is keep taking command of the squad.
Where do you see 11 wins? I mean, I'm not asking you to go down the games, but it's tough.
You know
it's
me well
tough.
Enough. I'm not going to say six, okay?
No,
I always
I would
exaggerate
say, I say nine, and I think a chance for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think it's between they and the Giants in their division. So 11, that's a healthy number.
Good football players in that field.
I know
right
they
now.
Do. Those
receivers are going to score. You know, Sproles going to score coming on that backfield. He's going to score. Those tight ends are going to score some points. And I think, you know, I hope if they go fourth down as many times this next year as they did this last year, I hope they do better than 48%.
Well, the offense is better around Carson.
No
the
question.
Line, the receivers, the running back. Yeah, how important
tackles here at the start of the season.
Yeah, how important is that offensive line for Carson?
Which it is the key. Big people allow the little guys, the skilled guys, to look good. You don't have them, it is tough. You're kidding yourself.
Yeah, 11 wins is really nice. Now, the first two games are on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They have to win one of those games, right?
Well, my thinking is don't even worry about the second game. Just worry about that.
Obviously. Yeah. But when we look at it.
You would like to think they're going to split on the road.
Right. And I think they can split in Washington.
Washington is an overrated football team.
And why do you say that?
I think Eagles were better than they were last year and lost to them.
Right.
Okay. So and they'll probably be better. And that's not to say they're not doing a good job. But I just don't think they have total personnel that we have here now.
You know, when you look at, Dallas, here's an interesting statistic. Dallas has not had back-to-back double-digit wins since 2000 seasons, mm-hmm. since 2002. The same team has not won the NFC East for 12, the next following year has not backed it up for 12 straight years. Why is Dallas not as good? And I don't think they're as good. Why are they not as good, in your opinion?
Well, maybe they've had trouble handling success. It's really easy for Dallas to strut early.
It sure is.
Everybody gives them credit for being better than they are all the time.
It's a star on the helmet. It's a joke.
Automatic. It's automatic. Yeah. People give them credit for being better than they really are. They did a hell of a job. That quarterback is very, very special.
Okay.
Very special.
When you were the coach, though, even back then, we all disliked Dallas and Philadelphia.
No question. You have
How
to.
Much was it that you that disliked Dallas?
Well, first off, when I came here, they were the team to beat.
Yes.
and we weren't very good. So I wanted to develop within the squad. We worked all training camp against Dallas. We talked about Dallas the whole training camp. Why? Because they were the epitome of the league. And if we were ever going to be any good, we're going to have to find a way to beat Dallas.
Yeah.
I can remember calling guys up in the middle of a bad practice. They want me to call Tam Landry and ask him to have a lousy practice. They're kicking our ass forever. We got to work, guys. We're going to catch up with it. And then the last week or so at training camp, then I started on the opener.
Well, when you look at Dallas now, they've had these arrests and suspensions. How much can it hurt a team to not have the right guys and the right culture in that locker room?
Oh, it can hurt a lot. Because, you know, they talk about culture. Culture is built through spirit. Spirit comes from esprit de corps and care. A group of guys that care about each other, you know. And when that gets shaky, you're just not as good a football team. You're not as good an organization.
And the owner, now, he's going to get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
But all he does is
bring in bad people. Not all, but there's a lot of bad people that he brings in.
And he helps some, and he loses some. But, you know, I'm for helping kids that make mistakes. You know, I'm a forgiving guy. But if they make it a second time, get them hell out of there.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't always do that.
I know. That's him.
Yeah, so it could hurt that team. But, so the Eagles, they win 11. They win the division, in your opinion, right?
I think they can win the division. I really do. I'm always optimistic about the Eagles. I am. I think they, you know, even when they're down sometimes, I think they have chances to win more games than they've won.
Right.
And I think that this year they have more talent. The Doug's got a year under his belt. His defensive staff's been working under Jim. They're all coordinated now. I can't see him being anything but better.
Within 3 years, they're in the Super Bowl?
Oh, I can't predict that. You know it takes.
But
you'd like
grow.
To believe you could do that?
Yeah, because you have a chance in the NFL. There's multiple teams. It's not like the NBA. Multiple teams have a chance in the NFL.
The last time I went to the Super Bowl, we won 4 games the year before.
Really?
The Rams.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
But those first 2 years here, there were a lot different than the training camps of today.
Yeah.
See, you could develop. Our two leading tacklers on a world championship team were linebacker and safety. They were not drafted. We signed them as free college.
How about that?
But we could work them. We could coach them. We could do everything with them. We could invest more time in those kind of kids. So it makes it tougher today.
Okay. Thanks, Dick.
All right.
Okay, a lot of things to digest with what Dick Vermeil talked about. But the thing that really jumps out are the 11 wins that he thinks the Eagles can get. And he makes a good point, and there is some validity to the fact, well, you can't project how good the teams are going to be this year based on last year. And I get that. But the travel schedule, the first 2 games on the road, you got 3 of the first 4 on the road, you've got 3 West Coast games. Now, the Eagles will stay in California between the Seattle game and the Rams game, but that's the second trip out there. Kansas City and Dallas are the other trips. They have the travel part of their schedule is not the easiest thing in the world. 11 games is a stretch. I looked at 9. But to think, could they possibly get 11? I don't know. I don't think they can get 11. But, I mean, he's the former NFL coach. And I think he still obviously loves the Eagles. That's his team, even though he won a Super Bowl with the Rams. 11 is a stretch. But obviously, we agree on Carson Wentz. He will get better. We agree on the offensive line being better. We agree on the offense being better. So there's a lot of things there which really are positives for the Philadelphia Eagles. People in Philadelphia in the Philadelphia area, just love to question whether Doug Peterson is going to last beyond this year. And Dick, as a rookie coach in the NFL, understands the dynamics, and obviously we talked about that. He was a head coach at UCLA, but it's so much different in the pros, but the year is different. And when you talk about whether the players respect the coach, they do respect Doug Peterson. Now, they respected Chip Kelly at the beginning, too. But it comes down to, are you really going to respect a guy who doesn't get it done in his last couple of years? Even though he won 10 in his second year, and then it kind of fell off the wagon after that. But there'll be lots of discussions about whether Doug Peterson has done a good job, and I'm sure during the season we will talk about that a lot. I want to address a couple of other football things. Number one, the Dallas Cowboys. And Dick and I, as you heard, we talked about that. I don't know how the Cowboys can continue to win, and he likes the quarterback. Dak Prescott's a good quarterback. Continue to win when they have all these internal problems. And by the way, with all the issues of the Cowboys, I know Jerry Jones has done a lot for football and a lot certainly for that franchise. He's done a lot of making money too. But you put a guy in the Hall of Fame that leads the league in bringing players to that team that either are arrested, indicted, or just flat-out bad people who have been suspended. They have more than any other team. 16, I think it's 16 over the last, I don't know, it's a short period of time. I don't know if it's a year or 2 years. 16 players have been any one of the above. But the Cowboys, and I've said this before, they can't be as good. They can't win 13. I don't think Dak Prescott can be as good. And they do not have back-to-back double-digit win seasons since 2002. But I don't think they will win the division. And you heard what Dick said about Washington. And I don't think Washington is really in the mix. I think it's the Eagles or the Giants, which will really be fascinating, which means they have to win the first Giants game here in Philadelphia, which is the third game of the season. It's the first home game because the second time they play the Giants, they come off of, that's their third straight road game, which is really difficult to win your third straight road game. And it's a week, it's a little over a week on West Coast time in California. Even though it's only a bus trip up to New York to play the Giants or New Jersey or whatever you want to call it, it's only a bus trip. It's still the third straight road game, which is really brutal and really tough for teams. So I think they will split with the Giants. But it's not time to break down each game yet. But I think it's the Eagles and the Giants that will compete to win the division. Another thing that I want to address, I mean, the stories that come out, and I know Chris Sims, which is Phil Sims' son, played a little bit in the NFL. I know Chris. He put out a story on the NFL Network that questioning the health of, and again I'm paraphrasing, the health of Carson Wentz because he wears a sleeve. Now at practice this last week, he addressed that, the sleeve. He's been wearing a sleeve, it's just kind of a thing he does, since high school. So it has nothing, zero, absolutely zero to do with an injury. Now the injury they have, and you just hope Nick Foles, first of all, if Carson Wentz goes down for any period of time, the Eagles have some problems anyway. But if it's only, let's say if he had an injury and it was only like two or three games, Nick Foles is perfect. But you want to see Nick Foles get healthy. And in talking to him multiple times since he felt the inflammation and the pain in his elbow, he's very comfortable and confident. And he says it's going to be fine. And you can tell his body language when he says it. He's not giving you a lot of nonsense. So they need him. They need him to be their backup, and I think there's not going to be a problem, but you got to hope that Carson Wentz doesn't hurt. But Carson Wentz, everything about the Eagles will be better, and I don't think people give Jalen Mills, okay, you can question that a little bit, a second-year player, but I think at the start of the season, Patrick Robinson is their starter at the other cornerback spot. The guy that continues, and you heard Dick Vermeil talk about him, Marcus Johnson. It's going to be interesting what they do at wide receiver. Now, they could have six, and that would account Mac Hollins, who really will be counted as a special teams player. They could have six, and I just think they really, from going from a year where you didn't have enough to a year you have too many, but Marcus Johnson is a player to watch. And more people don't know how he can't be on the football team. They just don't know how he can't be on the football team because he's played that well so far. He's gotten adjusted a little bit because he played, was here last year, and now he has a chance to actually make the roster. I also want to address, and it's been on the CBS website and Bleeding Green's website, I don't think Jordan Matthews will be with the Eagles next year. And the reason I say that is because they have young players. You always get more players. And Jordan Matthews has had the tendonitis in his knee, which a lot of players have. And he's playing with it at practice. Once he started this, he's playing with it at practice. But number one, do you want to give him the money that he wants? And obviously everybody wants a lot of money. And do you want to give him a four-year contract? And it's really about the signing bonus money. And when you know he's got that tendonitis in his knee and it could linger here and there. Not because he's not a good receiver, not a great receiver, but a good receiver. But I just want to clarify that. I just think from a business standpoint, not from Jordan Matthews not being good enough when he plays, from a business standpoint, you've got to question that a little bit. And I was pinned down, do you think he's going to be here or not be here? And my answer, you take one or the other. And the one I took was, I don't think he's going to be here. But not because he's not a good player and not because he doesn't play hard. But you look at those kind of things when the Eagles sign a player. The other thing that in football, and I'm so tired of, and you don't get many players defending Colin Kaepernick again. I think Malcolm Jenkins recently, and I didn't read it all, is defending Colin Kaepernick. But you can't defend, just look at him as a player. Forget about all the other issues that teams have to deal with. And at the time that I'm recording this, he has not signed with Baltimore, and I don't think he'll sign with Baltimore. I just don't think those fans have already outraged. Take a look at Colin Kaepernick's Twitter. He doesn't really put a lot of things out, very little things himself. He just retweets all the negative about problems with the police, about racial problems, about black women not being equal in pay and equal to white women. Why even do that? Whether you're right, and he retweets people he has no idea. Has he ever checked whether they get the same compensation as white women for the same jobs? Has he ever checked that? Probably not. Not probably not. He hasn't. But why would you, when you're trying to get a job, and part of the problem is you're only a backup quarterback, you're not a good quarterback, and you would cause so many, you could cause so many issues, and that really could be the problem. That really could be the problem. Why would he do that? Is he just that stupid? Does he not want to play football? Does he have enough money where he doesn't care whether he plays football again? Hey, listen, I don't think that things are all right. And I know there's issues at times with the police. I know there's issues with racism. I know there's issues with equality. But at the level that he tweets, retweets, he must have somebody just searching all the bad things that have happened or all the bad things that people say, remember, say have happened. Why would you give him a job? You got to deal with that. And he's such a hypocrite, too. He has told the team, and he's made it public, that if a team signs him, he will stand up for the national anthem. Well, if you believe in something, you know, are you going to be a hypocrite? First of all, he should have stood up anyway because it represents the military, not just the country. And you're dissing the military in most part when you do that. But he's a total stinking hypocrite anyway. But check out his tweet. I'm not asking you to follow him because I'm telling you he's really good and he's insightful, because he's not insightful. He's not insightful. When you retweet all the time and almost everything that he puts up on his Twitter is a retweet and almost everything has to do with the negative. Why do teams, and teams have to look at that stuff, why do teams want to get involved in that? All right, as we'll get into the Sixers at a later time. Just one comment about the Sixers. Markelle Fultz says they're a playoff team. Whether they are or they're not, how the hell does Markelle Fultz, who's not played a game with those players, played in the summer league, but it's not with most of the players, and didn't even play a full summer league, how does he know? But we'll get into that later when we get in the Sixers, when we get closer to the season. The Phillies and Matt Klentak. Now, I agree. I do agree with the approach that the Phillies are taking, trying to build up your minor league system, because it's really, it's average at best, and I say at best. They've over-evaluated players. J.P. Crawford is not even close to Freddy Galvis. Freddy Galvis is your shortstop for years. Cesar Hernandez, they have to find something to do with him if you're going to play Kingery, who they think's a major leaguer. And the same thing at first base with Hoskins. So they have to hope Tommy Joseph has a good year. But Matt Klentak, in the previous ownership regime, and John Middleton will spend money if, and he's told, this will make them better. They're basically buying minor league players, which is okay, but it's a lot of money to buy minor league players. Think about what Matt Klentak has spent in this offseason. And he's got six minor league players. $13 million for Clay Buchholz. Now, he had an option on Charlie Morton, who got hurt with the Phillies last year. He is pitching terrific for the Houston Astros. Terrific. Probably not as much money. He would have gotten more for Charlie Morton in a trade, and he would have tried to trade him. He would have gotten more for Charlie Morton because he got nothing for Clay Buchholz. He clearly would have gotten more for Charlie Morton. So that was a mistake. Michael Saunders, $9 million. Buchholz, $13 million. Michael Saunders, $9 million. That was a waste. Got nothing for those guys. Helixson. Helixson, you paid $17.2 million. Jeremy Helixson, can you imagine that? Because last year he made a mistake. He thought teams were going to sign him and he would get a first-round pick. Didn't work out that way. So now that turned out to be a mistake. And I can't believe the player, or I think it was players they got from Baltimore, are really that good, because Baltimore just did him a favor. They have a relationship, both Klentak and Andy McPhail, with the Orioles. But why would Baltimore trade for a starting pitcher when they have no chance of making the playoffs? And he won't be there after this year. So just by simple, just breaking this down, you got basically a suspect in the minor leagues for Helixson. So that's another $17 million. So that's $39 million. $39 million, and you got nothing. You got nothing. You got a couple of minor leaguers who really can't be that good. Howie Kendrick, who knows how that pitcher's going to be. I'm not dealing with past trades. Oh, they traded Papelbon and they got Pivetta. That's great, but we're not dealing with that now. We're dealing with this. We're dealing with this offseason. And did Matt Klentak do a good job? Howie Kendrick, you got a prospect, and he throws 73%, or the guy they got for, I don't know, Benoit, or whoever the hell it was. And they're paying all their salaries. I don't know what they paid Benoit, but all in all, that's over $65 million in this offseason, and you got six minor leaguers. Nishak, Colorado, the shortstop is a utility player, from what I'm told by somebody who knows the manager of the team that minor leaguer managed. Colorado has a lot of minor leaguers, a lot of good players in their minors. But Nishak's not a closer, won't pitch two innings, won't pitch back-to-back days. So what are you going to get? Again, all suspects. And Howie Kendrick, another prospect who's a suspect. But, okay, out of those players, if they get two players that make it, and really make it in a good way, not a great way, at the major league level, then possibly it's a good trade. But you won't know that for 3 years. But you look at, and their approach is the right way. You got to build it up. They won't sign big-time free agents after this season. It's after next season they're going to go for the guys. They're going to have to get a catcher for next year, because Alfaro, the guy they have in the minor leagues, is not a good catcher, and the two guys they got aren't starting catchers. So if you're going to have young pitchers, you want to have a good catcher. I like Cameron Rupp as a guy and maybe a backup, but you don't have a starting catcher. But for Matt Klentak to pay, what, $65 to $70 million and get six prospects, and you basically hope that two of them make it at the major league level, that was not, and I don't want to hear about his numbers and 70, 3% or ground ball outs by one of his pitchers. I don't really care about those numbers. I care whether the guy can be a major league ball player, and that's really what you're going to have to judge, and you won't know that probably for at least 2 years and more likely 3 years. $65 million for six prospects because they paid all their contracts. They paid them all. That's what cash considerations are. Nobody would take those players without the Phillies paying the contract. But they're lucky that John Middleton's the guy that makes those decisions, because in the previous ownership group, you would have not, the Phillies would not have done that, and none of that would have happened. So they're okay with wasting money if they get lucky with some players. All right, I hope everybody enjoyed Dick Vermeil. There's some, as I always am, working on some other things. Next week, depending on when I do it, the first preseason game for the Eagles against Green Bay on the road next week. So we'll see how that all breaks down. But it's getting closer and closer to the start of the real thing. At least we're going to have a football game, the first game against Green Bay on August 10th. So everybody have a great week. I hope you enjoyed the Howard Eskin podcast, episode number 14. And again, if you all you have to do is subscribe. Again, there's no cost involved. Just subscribe the Howard Eskin podcast on iTunes, and you'll be notified every time a new podcast goes up. Everybody have a great week. Hope you enjoyed it. And sayonara with this week's the Howard Eskin podcast.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.